Macau Comic Car with your hosts, Andrew Glauder
and Chris Ramos.
Tonight, we are going to cover Monsters by Barry Windsor Smith.
Barry Windsor Smith, a giant in the field.
Yes, a legend. He's done works such as Weapon X. He's did some DC work, some Marvel work, and a couple of independent stuff as well. So he's been in the business easy 40 years.
Yeah, and a lot of people might know him from Conan the Barbarian. That was probably one of his bigger runs back in the 80s. Yeah. Helped sort of show his style, and then it kind of turned into being a really good storyteller at the same time.
Right.
And that's kind of where Monsters came from.
Sure. And we decided to read Monsters and review the book because it came out this year, and this is his passion project. So he's been working on this story since 84. So this has been a passion project he's been working on for 35 years.
Yeah. And the really cool thing about this is we were just kind of looking up the availability of Monsters, because when this came out, which was early part of this year, right?
Yeah, like April, spring.
Yeah, so early 2021. Finally got published, finally started pumping out books, and the book itself is actually quite well made.
Yes.
Published by Fantagraphics.
Right. And that was kind of the weird thing that we were talking about, is this is the same publisher that publishes all the Peanuts remasters and all the Donald Duck spinoffs, Darkwing, you know, and various iterations of that. And so for them, this lighthearted comic-y thing to publish this book out was like a big 180. And it was kind of surprising to see this come out of them.
So a little history of this book. I mean, with comic book buffs and eventually, I think with historians, they'll look back on everything that Barry Windsor Smith did. You know, you always look at like an artist or a writer or, you know, a painter or anyone like that. You know, they can only produce so many things in their life. You know, actors, actresses, you know, there's only so many things that sort of becomes their portfolio. And it's been quite some time since Barry Windsor Smith has had something that was like his,
in the public eye.
His thing, where everyone was like, oh my gosh, this guy. So he kind of launched back into the mainstream for comic book lovers because he is a talented artist, a really talented artist, especially with pen and ink.
Exactly. And that's
all this is.
That's what this, it's pen and ink style. It's all black and white. And it's highly detailed, one of the most highly detailed books we reviewed. I mean, yes, we reviewed Sin City, and we've reviewed the independent comic Twilight Custard, but then this is his own thing as well.
Yeah, like every page on here, if you really do break it down, it looks like it would take some even modern artists who are just used to kind of pumping things out on a computer or something like that, or digitally, you know, drawing. Let alone really breaking this down into a thoughtful story and a thoughtful
cohesiveness.
Know, yeah. Even just the page layouts, you look at them and you're like, wow, he's really moving this story in that direct, like it was purposeful the whole time.
Right. And, you know, even though the only thing I would say is there's no like chapter breaks in this book, but even then, like you can consistently read this, like, 360 book in like a sitting or a couple days, and just it's a continuous story.
Yeah,
but still it provides really good pacing.
Yeah, so let's do a little background on this. So the lore of it is, in 1984 it started out as an Incredible Hulk story.
Yeah,
he wanted to write that for Marvel, to say, I want to write like the childhood of
Bruce Banner.
And he didn't really want to be light on it. He wanted to say, let's go into like his upbringing as a very harsh upbringing, you know, maybe, you know, look at was there sort of anger that was built up when he was a kid that kind of would reflect right. into the
family right? dynamics.
Yeah.
What was his environment like that he grew up in?
Yeah. And at the time, Marvel wasn't ready to take one of their premier figures. Cause I mean, in the 80s, Hulk was a whole, yeah, I mean, I think he Peter had a David show Hulk and everything. Yeah. Then. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and like the show on TV and everything. I mean,
sure. Oh yeah. Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah. It's like,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
I mean, everyone knew Hulk and it was really one of it at the time, one of their really strong, money makers, but also yes. like a really well-recognized brand. And I don't think they wanted to bring that down.
No, especially like after reading this, no.
Yeah. Yeah. So here is our little blurb about this being a very adult book.
Yes.
So,
mature content for yes. sure. It's not for the lighthearted or for younger readers.
I mean, even just reading through it without some of the really rough like abuse lines and things, there still has like Nazi Germany and like experiments on people and just the way people react. So yeah,
and there's no turning wheels on this book. It is just out.
Yeah. You know, and the title, you know, I know we're just hopping all around, but it's just things that are popping in. But when I first saw it, you know, the cover is a little misleading. So it has sort of this grotesque sort of Frankenstein looking face yeah. on it. So then you're absolutely. Like, look at entitled monsters right. and you're like, oh, I get it. It's like a monster.
But then you have this like American flag poking out of his ear.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's and, like, okay.
And you don't really, I mean, without reading, I always look at like, what is the cover, right? So yeah. without reading the back or the inside. So to me, it just looks like Barry Windsor Smith is doing a story about like almost like Frankenstein's monster
right.
or you know something
and
like
I could see that, but he really breaks down the very core definition of what could be considered what is a monster.
Yeah.
How do you build a monster? How do you what's the environment? What's the every aspect of it he breaks down in this book.
Yeah, and you start reading it and about 50 pages in you say, "Oh, I get it."
And it's real life like aspects people. And situations.
Yeah.
Basically, there are some superhero elements that he still puts in this book because that's still very dear to his heart,
mm-hmm.
but he wants to put it in a very realistic scenario.
Yeah, and it was his first book released in 16 years.
Yeah.
So I even have a quote here. It says, Windsor Smith describes the book as one that explores the life and times of two disparate American families fatefully connected by an abandoned Nazi project in genetic engineering that has been covertly reviewed, revived by the U.S. government. So it's like,
and it's like
wow, oh, there's a lot to it.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess in a little better analogy that I came up with was, this is Captain America growing up, but it's the Hulk. And the Hulk is in the World War setting, World War II.
Yeah. So that the book takes place, yeah. So
Captain America's origin, but instead of Captain America, it's the Hulk, and it's a deadly twist on it.
And it's pushed into the 60s, so it's like the Vietnam.
Right. Yeah, pre-Vietnam era.
So it's like if they were making a super soldier for the Vietnam era.
Yeah.
And they're using World War II Nazi technology.
Yes.
And they didn't have it quite right. They didn't have all of the formulas and didn't have it totally figured out. So things go horribly wrong. So it's not like they made a super soldier.
Sure.
They made a super soldier, but it just mostly just ruined this kid.
Right. And you get to delving into the book and the story and the characters. This bases around the life and times of Bobby Bailey and how he, of the government and the world around him turned him into a monster.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. You know, and when you read comics, you always kind of think of what are the real world repercussions. And I know we've kind of touched on that a little bit in some of the past podcasts of just, you know, it's one thing to read a book or read a comic or, you know, work through a graphic novel and think, this is a different world, but it's another thing to just put it like grounded really specifically into like American culture.
Yeah. And that's and what a very specific, lively time period that it
was. Like this is hyper realistic for the time period and hyper realistic for like a glimpse into this family, you know, and it's like,
and not it's very the family near dear and it's in. Personal.
Yeah. Right.
So I guess, this story also jumps around in flashbacks and various different time periods, but the story starts off, with you see Bobby just, they're going out to like, they hear his mother hears like, oh, well, the boys are, you know, I have to go find him for dinner and find out that
find her husband.
Yeah. Find her husband and son. And something is going like horribly wrong. And, you know, all of a sudden you find that the mother is like desperately hurt and Bobby is like
really hurt too.
Really hurt.
Yeah. So, and that's all you get to like, so it immediately opens with violence, domestic abuse, you know, and it's just right there. So the book, I mean, page one, you know, so
it's just in your face. And this is like, here's the problem. And now we're going to dial it back to how we got here.
Yeah. Sets the scene and then hits you with a flashback.
Very cinematic in that way.
Yeah. Actually, that's a good way to say it.
Yeah.
You know, it puts the action right up front. Like,
right.
Boom.
And then we kind of follow him and getting hired in at the recruitment office. And so they're kind of figuring out, you know, he's just coming off the street and he's looking for to get hired by the army. And he doesn't have any like background information, identification, nothing.
Kind of a
really
scrawny kid.
Scrawny kid, like, you know, he doesn't, maybe he's kind of scraping by.
Yeah.
Could be homeless, but we're not really too sure if he's been hopping around or anything. And Officer Powell is like, or not Powell, Officer McFarland, he's like, oh, I think you would be good fit for this project.
Yeah, we have a special
project, like, in
a special team that we
and,
are.
You know, all your problems will be taken care of by the army. You'll be, you know, compensated well. Oh, okay.
You know, and you do pick up as the reader, you pick up that the reason why he kind of fell into that was because he didn't want to say much about his childhood. He didn't want to say much of like who he is and where he came from. So then the army sort of took that as
an opportunity
that he is a nobody.
Yes.
You know, and then an opportunity to say, okay, now we've got a total nobody. And they kind of shuttled him off to the secret project, like kind of building up on his naive idea of what it is to help
and
the war effort.
If he would be taken out of society, would there any be, this would be the least amount of repercussions. That,
yeah. Like, would anyone care?
Would anyone care?
Yeah.
And so they take him off and you just kind of follow. They find out, oh, well, you know, take your sunglasses off and he's missing an eye. And you're like, oh, that's not good.
Yeah. And they're like, how did this happen?
Well, he doesn't really want a lot on. He's just like, oh, you know, I think he made something up just to say, you know, just to pass and keep it going. And the whole time, like, Officer McFarland's like, oh, I might have made a mistake.
Yeah. Like, there's something that we didn't totally vet this person out. You know, there might be some underlying emotional problems in there. They didn't really want to have that in the program because you need to be of sound mind and, you know, you need to be a strong character, you know, things like that.
Sure.
Right away, actually, you start seeing really a lot of similarities to some of Barry Windsor Smith's other projects, you know. Like, I mean, he definitely has an artistic style, but the great thing about this book, if you're familiar with his work, and even if you looked at some of his work from like 20 or 30 years ago, it was for like Marvel Comics and things. So some of it was just really simplistic, you know, like they had to just get that page done, like pump it out, let's go color it, you know? And this one, you can really tell that he still has his style, but it's like someone gave him a whole week to just work on it. You know, it's like you don't get that in the industry. Sometimes it's like, you got to get it done. Right. Like,
absolutely.
But yeah, no, it's
and I guess, nice. So you were talking earlier, I think you mentioned it's like a crosshatch style or. Like,
yeah. So he's really famous for his pen and ink.
Yeah.
And that's mostly just legitimately old style dipping a pen in an inkwell, scratch, 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 dip it, scratch, 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 dip it, scratch, scratch, scratch. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if nowadays he used like a Micron pen or something like that. That's just a finer tip.
Sure.
That there isn't like a dip and draw kind of right. thing. But
I do like that all of his figures are very identifiable.
Yeah, I mean,
especially black and white, that's probably hard to do.
Yeah.
And the style, I mean, and to do it for as many like 300 and some pages.
And you can see that, you know, just even though his characters are simplistic, just the way that he draws like their mouth or their eyes or like how their, you know, expressions are, he kind of pulls that in every single time. And then you immediately pick up. Because, I mean, some of the uniformed officers, they all look sort of the same, right?
Sure. He still uses all the like rules of lighting and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just like when you're down in the basement or they're trying to like hide out from somewhere or there's like a desk lamp or something, he still goes and obeys all those rules.
Well, and a lot of texture. And I mean, even when I was first reading it, I was really actually pleased with how he uses his backgrounds. You know, a lot of times artists don't really think much of the background when they're doing comics because the focus is on the character, right? Sure. And if you really look at a lot of the storyline, you're pretty much like right there. I mean, you're not like, it's not being drawn from across the hallway or like,
no.
You know, there's no big.
Yeah, again, huge, that personal.
Yeah, you're personal pretty much standing right next to these characters the whole time. Yeah. And then it becomes really kind of like hard to, you know, handle sometimes because they're really get intense and they're like, you're just literally right there.
Sure. I guess, did you see that on, what was it, on page 28, another couple characters are looking at all the comics in the basement and he draws like Batman and a Human Torch and like Captain the Boy America, Commandos and stuff like that. And Captain America, I think he gets drawn. So it was a little like love letters to all the like the golden age.
Yep. He got to kind of catch into that. And you know, the other part of it is when you see his style, like sometimes he's doing a drawing and there's a lot of snow, like blowing snow.
Yeah.
That's just such a big visual from like Weapon X when he did Weapon X.
Yeah.
There was always that blowing snow because it was in the Canadian wilderness.
So he still likes all those superheroic elements to it.
Yeah.
He just wanted to give it a serious tone.
He wanted to tell his story.
Yeah. You know,
he's been around comics. I mean, he's 70 years old now. He's been around comics.
He's still alive today. So
for 50 years.
Yeah.
So he's like, yeah, I got a story.
Sure. So back to like the story. So we go along and we follow a couple characters, and we're also introduced to Officer McFarland's like family, and we find out that those guys, he introduces the elements of telepathy and what in that setting you could play on that.
Yeah, I don't know. Andrew and I we didn't know if that was just coming out of left field or like why was he introducing that, but I think he was just I think he was leading up to some of the more sadder moments.
Sure. And I think it's a very, like a plot device or something to help move, like,
what does it give that character
something to do and something to flesh out the backgrounds. We were talking the pre-show that every character basically has their own story and he goes into like a background and he fleshes out like where their origins are, how they kind of got to here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
how they played a role in Bobby's life and how they came to be.
Well, and when I was reading it, you know, you really pick up on, you know, sometimes we mention like playing the long game, which mostly just means to me, playing the long game in comics is like if Marvel or DC said, hey, you're the new comic writer for this series, and you start laying all these groundworks, and then when you're reading it, you're like, how are you going to wrap this up in 5-ish, 10 issues?
Yeah.
You know, like, no, I know I'm going to be writing the character for 4 years. And it's like, what? You know, that's
right.
So you same idea is, you know, if you had a TV show, it's like you want a TV show for years. But, you know, if they said you have one season, tell your story.
Yeah.
So like in this story, you get the idea that, well, it's really nice to see that. First of all, I thought the pacing was slow and meaningful, like slow in a really good way,
right? But it wasn't slow as in like and like we mentioned, there's no like chapter breaks, so
yeah,
there's still like stopping points he's kind of like carved out but you could, it still flows really well with each other.
It's almost like resting your brain moments.
Yes. You know? Kind of digesting it. Yeah.
Like it, when it gets really intense, he kind of stops and he brings you back to the past and tells some story from like another viewpoint.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, oh, it's a good brain break, you know, but it's the arc that some of these characters go through, like his mom. I mean, her arc from when you first meet her to like the end. Oh my gosh. It's like her character is strong, like really developed. Like, you know, he really thought about every angle he's going to push with her.
Right. And, you know, she, this is in like the World War II. And so when her husband, Tom, she knew him as like a lighthearted working class, average American, you know, he was a translator for the army and he was getting deployed over in Germany for the war. And she finds out that like, he's not coming back at scheduled time with everyone else. She has to kind of, she's also raising their young son. And so she has to kind of put on a brave face and kind of help him grow up, without a real prominent father figure in all his life.
Yeah. And you know, you can't help but to sort of pull into some of that world history and just think, you know, if you were a single parent, if you had one son and your husband went away to fight in the war, you're a single parent, you know, it's you and your son. And you see all these other husbands come back from the war and yours
doesn't. So it makes you like freak out and kind of paranoid about what's going on.
And just building that suspense of just regular daily life. I felt like every page here, since there's so much black, there's so much, you know, there's no color and there's no like happy blue skies, you know, like it's constant, like, like a big blanket is sort of like on top of you while you're reading this.
And then there's also like all the conspiracy stuff she's surrounded with too, because the government doesn't want to tell her any reasons why her husband's like still in overseas. And so they're like, well, she's like, can I write to him? What are you putting in the letter?
They're like,
they have to like really vet it so hard.
Yeah. We're working on him. So they had to like I don't know what that's called. Deprogram him.
deprogram him. Yeah. And he's never the same person though when he comes back. Yeah. Like, you know, in like a Vietnam setting or like, you know, somebody comes back. Of course, they're not going to be the same, but this was like, Barry Windsor Smith was like, all right, let's take that to an extreme.
Yeah. I you know, I wonder too, you know, as he was writing this, he was probably, you know, writing it, I think on a one level. And then I think he sat down and just kind of punched all of the pieces up. You know, it felt like he took an idea and you were like, oh, geez, I get that. I see what's happening here. And then he like added three more layers to it. Like,
oh, and this is happening. This is happening. Like, this screwed up.
Like, oh wow. Okay. This is the tone of the book, I think, changes to the point where now it's a mature reader.
Yeah, absolutely. And once, you know, you figure out, you know, Bobby kind of becomes this like, well, this, you see him grow up as this like, you know, little boy without a dad or prominent figure. And then, you know, he's like an adult and he's like homeless and you can't help feel for him, or you're like, what's going on with his life? How did he get here? And then he becomes this like Hulk, a monster. And, but his body is so like too drastically evolved. Like, unlike the Hulk, where the Hulk can articulate words at least and expressions and emotion, where he can't anymore.
Yeah.
And that's just sad to see that whole arc kind of happen. And you can't feel for him.
So I mean, that's true. He doesn't really have, at that point, he just becomes a, like a memory bank for us, you know, like we sort of live the rest of the book in his flashbacks.
Yes.
And, you know, I think people who wanted him to just, you know, stand up and fight or something, it's like you just got caught up in his life as a kid and like his family as a and his mom.
Right.
And like,
it's a great character study. Believe me, it's a great character story.
You know, and I think the connection point with him being sort of a grotesque thing, you know, that connection, I think what it's showing the reader is he is grotesque looking on the outside, you know, not to get so deep, but he's grotesque looking on the outside. But look at these other people who seem to have everything together, but they really don't. So then you start thinking about the title of this book, Monsters. So you're like,
who's the real monster?
Who is the monster?
Right.
Visual monster are we looking at? Or like these other people who have some serious issues?
Like the father. Tom is probably considered a monster. Yeah.
They paint him like you know exactly where you want to place him in sort of the hierarchy of this book. You're like, oh gosh, that guy is something else.
he's a work or something. Yeah. You know, that's just like the environment. Are you a product of your environment? I think that's one of the other things that I think this book wanted to answer that question. You know, how does that monster happen? Is it because of your surroundings? It's because of who you encounter? It's because of the situation you put in? It's very interesting.
Well, you know, so here's another important piece of it all. So Bobby went through the experiment and it turned out terrible.
Yeah.
And he outwardly changed his appearance to a grotesque thing.
Yes.
But inside, he, I think, is reflecting on his whole life at that point. Like, oh, how did I even get here? And then you look at like how he got there, and then you think, well, what's going through his mind? You know, is he blaming anyone, or is he just saying like, this is my life story? You know?
Yeah.
And so
it's like an autobiographical.
Yeah, like he wasn't bitter, and you know, you could tell he was just sort of like, these are the cards I was dealt, and that's what I got.
Right. But yeah, it's definitely a very interesting book. And just to kind of grow with the supporting cast, seeing kind of, you know, some of the creative liberties like Barry Windsor-Smith uses from his super heroics of trying to, you know, deliver these like plot threads and stuff like that.
Yeah.
These supernatural elements he can sneak in, and some of the crazy like Germany Nazi things like he gets from like, or at least I felt like some of it was like from Hellboy or something he was bringing over.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, it's almost like he took his whole career, you know, from, and when you go on, let me just get back to that. That's there. His website is barrywindsor-smith.com.
Okay.
And when you look at the site, it just pretty much says these are the projects that Barry Windsor-Smith, you know, worked on. And he worked on the X-Men and Conan the Barbarian, and he worked on Red Sonja for a while, and Opus, and Gore Blimey Press with The Devil's Lake, and even DC and Valiant and Image and Mail. Yeah. I mean, he's worked with everybody everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the reason why he was always hired by a lot of these publishers is because, you know, number one, he had a unique style. But number two, I think he really got like the characters he was drawing.
Sure.
Like he drew that Exo Manowar and stuff, you know, like he really put that together, and Bloodshot and stuff. That's probably one of
some of the really Valiant stuff.
Yeah. Like super Valiant stuff. And I think, you know, when people look at that, they think he is one of the artists where you can hand him a script and say, here's the scene, here's the layout, and he would just make it happen.
Right.
So then he took all of those experiences, everything on here. I mean, he's even done some Daredevil and stuff too.
Sure.
And I think he just showed everyone. I mean, they're calling this book like his his Magnus Opus.
Yeah.
Like this is like his swan song.
It's
like
his thing. Yeah.
And I think he's showing the whole comic book community, like, you don't have to stay in a niche, and you don't have to stay in conformity, and you don't have to use the digital, you know, digital artwork and stuff. You can tell a story based on you, you know, it is fun. I mean, cause he really is pulling all of those from 50 years of work. Really?
Right.
I mean,
that's not a lot of creators can do that.
No, I mean, that's great to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But the characters in here are super memorable. Super well done. All the artwork. I mean, if you grab books like I do and just sort of flip through them, you know, like flip. I'll take this. This is cool. There isn't a single page. I mean, we've been flipping back and forth through this while we're recording.
Even in some of the pages where he doesn't like fill it with like panels of art. he'll still from the mother's perspective, she was always like journaling. And he would take and just write some of her notes on there.
Actual
cursive, which was, I think, an interesting choice, but at the same time, like, it gives it more personal touch to it, you know? And there's still like, it's still legible if you can read cursive.
Well, yeah. And it's like, you know,
and then that also gives like a perspective, like the mother's like mindset throughout this book that evolves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cause she starts like midway. And then, when she's like younger and she's like, oh, I miss my husband too. Oh, I'm kind of afraid of my husband.
Yeah. And then she's like, I've met a friend and
you learned about her story.
She's like, I shouldn't write it in here. You know?
She's like afraid of like the government, like smuggle.
You really get the idea that she's honestly writing this. I mean, you really get tapped into these people. And I'm telling you, I would read this for 20 or 30 pages and then like put it down for a minute, like, whew, you know, like you're really in it.
Absolutely. I think I powered through like the first 100 pages and then I would take like a 50 page break here and there. The different like timelines and the chapters.
And it sets a pace, it keeps you in it, you know, and like I said, even flipping through the pages, you know, one is cursive with some spot illustrations. The next one is, you know, all four panels. The next one has no panels. The next one has, you know, all black with just text on it, you know, and the next one is like all from the perspective of the police. And it's just it's just back.
Really,
and back
it's really
back.
Well thought of.
Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine. I really want to see some of the original pages he did on this, you know, because that would be really something to see.
Yeah. I wonder how much editing and how much all like the behind the scenes stuff that he had to do. I'm glad that this wasn't a Marvel book because then it would have been really reserved.
Yeah, they probably would have backed down quite a bit.
Yeah, you would have had to strip half the story, really. And so I'm glad he was able to actually bring his vision to life and just let it go.
Yeah. Just an awesome book. So, you know, and the nice thing is we try to look for stories that sort of break from the norm, you know, and kind of...
An interesting read.
Yeah, put another aspect on what exactly makes a comic and what exactly, you know, is a serious grown-up comic? You know, what is that? And what is the difference between Marvel and Fantagraphics and Image and Vertigo? Sure. And all, you know, it's just there's so many companies out there now that are taking the leap into really, really, you know, I don't want to say grown-up, but just really professional stories.
Right. And I would say if you like any like true crime stories or podcasts or things like that, I would definitely check this out. You know, you definitely get to like grow up with all the characters and kind of figure out how they tick and things like that. And it's a tragedy. We can't scoot around that. It's a sad book. There's not a lot of happy moments in there. But there's definitely like really strong character moments that you're like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, there's little wins.
There's small like, wins. Oh,
that's a dig. You got it. You know.
Yep. Especially bad.
But yeah, excellent all around.
Yeah, this is definitely one of the top reads of the year that people are saying.
Yeah, I think we're gonna call it. It's like a top 10 now because I mean, it really hit the market strong. People are gonna remember this for a long time.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So we definitely highly recommend it and hope you check it out. It's readily available. You can pick it up at most places online right now. That's a very more affordable book and
check out your local comic book stores too, because the cover price is $40.
It was $40 and you can usually get it for half off that,
something like
and
that.
It's
something
a hardcover, it'll hold up really nice and it'll look great on the bookshelf.
There you go.
Just don't let the kids read it. All right. This is Bam Pow Comic Hour with your hosts,
Chris Ramos
and Andrew Glauner, signing off.
See you later.